Best boy Justin, win me a goldfish.
What?
Best boy Justin, I want takoyaki.
What the hell are you...
Best boy Justin, look, fireworks.
Best boy Dan, what do you think this is, a summer festival?
No. It's the summer festival episode! Hello and welcome to the Best Boys podcast. I'm Best Boy Dan.
And I am the entity legally known as Best Boy Justin.
And this is our summer festival episode. We got our usual banter, some news, and then we're going to tell you all about what to expect in summer festivals and anime. And finally, we'll wrap up with a top 10 list.
Hell yeah.
So kicking things off... Like we talked about last time, I actually got some time to catch up on some anime this year, and apparently I'm just giving all of my attention to the Netflix shows. I've been watching Shaman King, Beastars, and Dorohedoro. Have you seen any of them, Best Boy Justin?
I have not. I haven't seen any of those, but I do want to watch Shaman King.
So I'll start off with Shaman King, because Shaman King is... it is a very kind of formulaic shonen. It's definitely geared towards like a younger audience, but it does seem like it's starting to like... We only have like the first 13 episodes available in America. I think they're well past that in Japan. It's just locked up in Netflix jail. It's a little slow moving. The story, like, you can feel the age of it because I think it was written back in the 90s originally. Mm-hmm. But it is just a solid shonen. So like, as long as you're not expecting like new flashiness, like your Chainsaw Mans or your Jujutsu Kaisens. If you like kind of a classic shonen, it's really good. Beastars, however, is like this crazy ass drama that I think we will have to do an episode on at some point. Probably our furries episode.
Oh boy.
But it is, oh my God, it is so good. It's basically like, it's kind of like Zootopia high school, but like super dramatic. And also like, there's this huge tension between like the carnivores and the herbivores, and like it starts off with like one of the herbivore students got eaten, and like it gets serious. And then Dorohedoro is just like this like super bloody, like really interesting kind of sci-fi fantasy thing. If you've seen like the picture of the like lizard head guy, that's Dorohedoro. But all three of them I thought were excellent. I'm like really surprised with how good Netflix's output has been lately with anime.
Excellent. Yeah, so I've been kind of doing some similar stuff. I have been watching, you know, a few of the currently running shows. I really like The Great Jaw. He Won't Be Defeated. That show is great. You know, one thing I did do is I did finally break my sports anime hiatus. That's right. I am watching sports anime. Yeah, well, you do know this, but you forgot.
I do.
Yeah, I started with watching, Remain. Yeah, Remain.
Right.
So that was what I broke my sports anime hiatus with. And it's been really good so far. Like, I literally...
I have a question for you about it.
Yeah, sure.
I only got, like, to the, like, setup part. Have you gotten to, like, any of the actual, like, water polo sport?
Yeah, so what I was saying was I didn't watch any of it until last week. And then... in like one night I binged all of it. So yeah, we've gotten into the water polo stuff. He's like relearning the rules. We're in a training arc preparing for a tournament arc now.
Okay. And how is the like action so far?
Well, it's kind of hard to say because, there's only so far been one, they've only played one match so far, pretty much.
Okay.
So it's still hard to say. From based on that match, pretty okay. But, you know, it wasn't even an actual match. It was like a training match. So I think we'll find out once we enter this tournament arc.
Yeah. I wonder if that show's going to be 13 or, like, 24 episodes.
You know, I'm not sure.
I feel like it needs to be a full season because, like...
It's not moving very fast.
Yeah, but that's we're so used to watching sports animes that, like, are really long and, like, mostly out already.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't remember a time where I've watched a long-running sports anime that, like, just started.
Right, yeah. So, you know, we'll have to see on that one. But that, and this is the one that is a surprise for you, Best Boy Dan, is not the only sports anime I've been watching. Last night or the night before, I don't remember, started watching Yoamushi Petal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I figured...
What drew you to that one?
Well, you know, as you know, but the best buds out there don't know, due to just how crazy and weird life is, I actually now work at a bike shop.
Oh, that makes total sense then.
Yeah, I didn't even put that together. I work at a bike shop, and I was thinking, like, after I had sat down and like, binged Remain, I was thinking, wow, like, this is great. Sports anime is wonderful. What else should I watch? And then I thought, well, I work at a bike shop, so I guess I should probably watch a bicycle anime. And it's been pretty good. I have to say, it's one of the most fun parts for me personally has been watching how they anime-ify all of the company names for the bicycle manufacturers.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, you have Colmago instead of Colnago, and, like, it's just been, like, kind of fun. You have Sculpt instead of Scott. But the show itself has been really good, too.
My one tip is make sure you watch every episode has an after credits scene.
Yes, I have.
They're hysterical.
Yeah, they're very funny. I like how they're like semi-divorced from the main storyline. So like you get to see like the spiky haired kid, the broody kid who is his like first friend watching the anime that he's watching.
Love Hime.
Yeah, Love Hime. That's been really fun. But yeah, so I'm really enjoying Yoamushi Petal, learning more about bicycling stuff, because I actually don't know anything about cycling. This is working at this bike shop has been my only introduction to it, so.
I think some of it is probably true, but I also think that, like, some of it is, like, definitely anime-ified.
Oh, it has to be. Well, for the most part, there's, like, parts where they're talking about, like, oh, let's go buy new frames, and, like, those things cost, like, $2,000 for an entry-level like road bike frame. So like, no, high school students aren't going to buy them on their, you know, after school or whatever.
That is fair.
But you know, other than that, I don't know enough about cycling to say, but I'm sure, you know, some of it is anime fudged there for you.
It's a really good show. Once you get to season two, I haven't watched that yet. We can watch together.
Awesome. Yeah, so you know, that's kind of the other thing I've been watching. Like I said, I am also not as invested in this season as I was in some other seasons, so I'm taking some time to watch some older stuff. I am sort of keeping on top of, you know, the normal shows. I'm watching My Hero and all that, but you know, just trying to go back and revisit a couple things while I have the time.
Yeah, I am behind on just about everything other than Tokyo Revengers and Girlfriend.
Yeah. Oh, and
the most quality.
Also, Dragon Maid.
Oh, and of course Dragon Maid. Yeah. Like, which is, could not possibly be behind on Dragon Maid.
I don't think we needed this season. Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think we needed to say it, but it's still amazing. So.
Oh yeah, top tier anime.
Yeah, best fight scenes so far.
Best battle anime 2021.
Yeah. But you know what, with all that said, I think you know, it's time for us to check in with Studio WEEB for some anime news.
So I have a really lighthearted story to start us off with. Are you ready?
I'm ready, Best Boy Dan. Let's hear it.
So an investigation by the Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare in Japan conducted over the last fiscal year of among 24,000 businesses in Japan found cases of legal overtime work at 37% of businesses. So this story is really about how kind of damaging the work culture in Japan is, which we have talked about previously on the podcast, but let's get a little bit more into the numbers here. Of the locations where overtime was confirmed, 33.5 or 2,982 locations were found to have cases of working more than 80 hours of overtime per month. 4.7% or 419 locations had people working more than 150 hours per month.
Holy
the cases God. Were the result of either absence of labor management agreement, which is required for overtime work, or because the business were forcing workers to work overtime beyond the upper limit of the labor management agreement. In one extreme example, the ministry confirmed that a small business in a retail industry had been allowing employees to work 235 hours of overtime work per month. That's an additional 235 hours to what they were already working.
That is bananas.
The Labor Standards Inspection Office issued corrective guidance to improve the situation. The government has been attempting to curb long working hours in Japan through legal reform. Last April, small and medium-sized businesses became required to regulate the upper limit of overtime work to 100 hours per month. So just 100 extra hours.
Oh, only an extra 100.
Overtime is capped at 720 hours per year. The Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare stressed the overwork may increase further as businesses attempt to recover from COVID-related economic downturn. In the last fiscal year, there was a tendency to shorten working hours due to the influence of the new coronavirus. The amount of illegal overwork might have decreased, but health impediments caused by long work hours are still occurring frequently. There is concern that the economy is headed towards recovery. There will be workplaces that enforce long working hours due to lack of personnel as we endeavor to provide thorough guidance into the future. So this is something I think we're seeing here in America too, with like a lot of companies finding themselves like short on staff for a myriad of reasons and then just requiring more work from their employees. And this is a little anime adjacent for us, but I think because it is such a prevalent part of that culture, and especially in the anime and the manga industry, it's worth talking about.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially because we just finished watching Killing 300 Slimes, where the premise of it is that the main character has died due to overwork, and a lot of people may think like, oh, that's, you know, that's a funny, silly, premise that doesn't happen in real life, but it actually does. You know, we are fairly lucky here in the United States that we have a strong history of union organizing, which has kept, you know, working overtime agreements and stuff like that to a much lower level than there is in Japan. Mind you, there's been a lot of changes, you know, with that in recent years, with the unions not being as strong as they used to be, and in some cases openly manipulative. But Japan doesn't have this history of workplace organizing, and that's why you end up with this culture where, you know, they're saying, oh, we're only gonna have you work 150 overtime hours a month. Like, that's the limit we're putting on it. So, you know, I think that's crazy. And as we talk about, you know, not just anime, but also the culture it comes from, it's important to understand this kind of, framework for how work culture is there.
God knows this isn't even including all the times you have to go out for drinks with your boss.
Yeah, that too, which is a whole other can of worms.
Oh my God. If I had to do that here, I'd lose my mind.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to start us off with another, hard hitting, hard boiled journalism story here. And that is that Bandai...
I wish it was so I could do the hard boiled detective drop. Yeah.
Bandai Namco, is currently holding the Gundam Online Expo. It started on August 26th and it will continue until September 5th. which is going to be the day that this episode airs, so you can check out the last day. The event will feature the 2021 Gunpla Builders Cup winners announcement ceremony, as well as the Gunpla live stream shopping experience co-hosted by Bandai Namco's Collectibles U.S. headquarters and model television host Rinrin. The event will also include videos of current and upcoming Gundam anime and live action titles from Netflix and Crunchyroll, as well as specially produced content.
Live action?
Yep. Well, because there is a live action title coming from Netflix, though we haven't had a whole lot of info on it right now. This year's event will again feature the Gunpla exhibit and an augmented reality version of Japan's Gundam-based Tokyo venue. And exclusive merchandise will be available for order during the event. That last part is what usually interests me a whole lot. But, you know, I took a look at what they had to offer for premium Bandai, you know, event exclusive stuff. Not as much as they had
last year.
Yes, this is what this is the thing where I bought like 5 or 6 kits last year. There was only one kit this year that I was even remotely interested in.
Which one was that?
And that is the flight type Goof mobile suit.
Goof.
Yeah. But I didn't even, it wasn't even really worth like trying to sit up and catch it before it sold out. A little bit disappointing. There's some stuff there that might interest other people, just not a whole lot that interests me. But the very first ever Gundam Online Expo was actually held in August of 2020. So it's good to see that they are continuing this, although I am sad that the Gunpla selection was not as juicy as it was last year.
Yeah, you mentioned that they're going to be, like, announcing the winners and whatnot. I'm just, like, totally imagining, like, the, you know, Miss Universe pageant, and they're just like, the most beautiful Gundam in all the land.
Yeah, no, it's exactly like that. And if it's not, beautiful. Then it should be.
And you just see, like, a Gundam with, like, a sash, and it's, like, waving.
Yeah.
In a swimsuit.
Yeah, so, you know, that's something to keep an eye out, and that's my little bit of Gundam news for this week.
Well, you have your Gundam news. I have my Hero Academia news.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm actually really excited about this. Funimation announced that it will screen My Hero Academia, World's Hero Mission, the third anime film in the My Hero Academia franchise, in October in Japan with English subtitles and with an English dub. The film will screen in 150 theaters in the sorry, 1,500 theaters in the United States, Canada, and the UK, and Ireland on October 29th, and in Australia and New Zealand on October 28th. The film will also screen in Latin America, in Spanish and Portuguese. Funimation Global's group's Wakanim will screen the film in Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, and Iceland, with English subtitles as well as each country's respective language, except for Iceland, because... screw Iceland.
Yeah, they know what they did.
That's kind of my favorite part of the story, is like everyone gets it released in their language except Iceland.
Yeah, fuck us.
But we finally have a date for it coming here, and that is a movie I would go to the movie theaters for. So far, I've only seen Demon Slayer in movie theaters, and this would be a welcome second film.
Yeah, totally. I can't wait to see this one, actually. I don't have anything else to add to it. It looks great, and I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
So next up on my end of the news, the official website for the television anime of Maiko Uchino's Slow Loop manga revealed the first promotional video and visual. The video announces the main cast and some more staff members, and this is what I think is going to be my next... slice of life.
This is the fishing one
story. Yes. Yeah. This one is about fishing. The manga centers on Hiyori, a girl who enjoys fly fishing by the beach, an activity passed down to her by her late father. On one typical day at the beach, she happens to meet Koharu, who also happens to be her new stepsister from her mother's new marriage. The series will have a collaboration with the city of Yokosuka, a key location in the anime, and the collaboration will include posters in shopping districts and stores, especially fishing stores, some projects, and original collaboration goods at Yokosuka. Uchino published a one-shot manga with the same title in Manga Time Kirara in April 2018 before launching the full serialization in September 2018. And the anime itself is going to premiere on in January 2022. So this is one that I'm kind of excited for. I had never read the manga, but as soon as I saw, like, I saw the picture and then I saw Slow Loop Fishing anime, I was like, this is it. This is the one. Yep. This is the next one.
Winter is starting to look pretty stacked.
Maybe winter is going to be the new stacked season every year from now on, I can totally live with.
Well, I think we're also just getting like a lot of things that probably were like started and then like COVID happened and are like finally catching up. Because I know that's happening possible. With like movies too.
We're getting like a second resurgence of COVID.
Yeah, there was like content. There was like all the projects that were like basically done and ready to put out that like got held back, and now all the things that like just got delayed from it.
Yeah.
So speaking of why winter is going to be so incredibly stacked, I have probably the most exciting news, and that is that Attack on Titan is. Final season part two is going to be coming in January. The official website for the Attack on Titan final season anime announced that on Sunday, the final season part two will premiere with episode 76, Danzai, or Sentencing for English speakers, on the NHK General's channel in January of 2022. Before the new part airs, a special compilation version of the story thus far and the original anime DVDs release telling stories of Levi, Annie, Mikasa, and other characters' point of views so far will also air, which I think is also pretty interesting. Like, I'm curious to see, you know, a recap from Levi's perspective.
Yeah, I think that'll be really cool. I think that's also a really great way to do a recap episode.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's... I mean, I don't know. I can't say it's never been done, but I don't remember it ever being done.
Yeah. So I'm hella hyped for some more Attack on Titan.
Yeah, me too, dude. I think it's going to be really good. I'm looking forward to it.
Had a finally hell of a cliffhanger, too.
We'll finally wrap up this this chapter in anime history. And then we get to look back and gaze upon the glory that is the completed Attack on Titan. For my little final bit of anime news today, I wanted to do something a little bit out of left field. But TMS Entertainment and Magnetic Press have announced that they are publishing a tabletop role-playing game based on the Lupin the Third franchise.
Oh, that's rad.
For those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, like, tabletop role-playing, this is like a Dungeons & Dragons version, but with Lupin the Third world. The game will feature adventures and heists with an open-world quest system. The game will use D6 MV, which is a variant of the D6 West End Games rule set. And the companies will also release a retrospective coffee table book for the 50th anniversary of the Lupin the Third anime. The book will feature comprehensive looks at each episode, feature, and season produced by TMS Entertainment, as well as looks at the characters, media adaptations, and artwork. TMS Entertainment is also producing a new anime season titled Lupin the Third Part 6 to commemorate the original anime's 50th anniversary, and the anime is licensed by Sentai Filmworks. So this is pretty cool. Lupin the Third is a somewhat iconic show for a lot of people. Maybe not as much in the West, although I do remember, I do remember from like that Midnight Run block. It just was never as like popular as like Dragon Ball Z and Gundam and all those other things were. This seems pretty cool. I would love to play a couple of sessions of the Lupin the Third role-playing game. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I think we definitely have to do that.
Well, I have enough nerd friends. We can definitely make this happen. So sign up for our Patreon if you want to.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll turn it into a Patreon podcast.
That does it for this week's episode of Anime News. Let us know what you think. Are you going to get yourself some Lupin the Third role-playing action in? Are you as excited for Slow Loop as I am? What do you think? Let us know. Hit us up by email at thebestboyspod@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at @bestboys_pod. And with that being said, I think it's time to dive on into the meat and potatoes. Meat and potatoes, my friends.
Meat and potatoes.
Best Boy Dan, it's time for Matsuri.
Matzo ball soup?
No, dude. Matsuri. Matsuri is the Japanese word for a festival or holiday. In Japan, festivals are usually sponsored by local shrine or temple, although they can be secular. And there are no specific Matsuri days for all of Japan. Dates vary from area to area and even within a specific area, but festival days do tend to cluster around traditional holidays, such as Setsubun in February. That's where they throw the beans. I don't know if you remember that from anime.
What kind of beans Oban do they throw? August.
I don't know. Like, just beans. Like, it has to do with banishing a demon. I don't know the full story. I just know they throw beans at each other, and it's great.
That's rad.
I wish we had a holiday where we threw beans at each other.
Yeah, that's every day for me. I just walk down the street throwing beans at people.
No, I believe it. But almost every locale has at least one Matsuri in late summer, early autumn, usually related to the paddy harvest.
Oban is probably the holiday most people in the West are likely familiar with. Oban is an annual Buddhist event for commemorating one's ancestors. Oban is mainly observed from August 13th to the 16th, though some areas it is observed in mid-July. It's a very big day for travel and, of course, going to festivals. Notable matsuri often feature processions, which may include elaborate floats. Preparation for these processions are usually organized at the level of neighborhoods or machi. Prior to these, the local kami, or deity, may be ritually installed in mikoshi and paraded through the streets.
Yeah, and one can always find in the vicinity of a matsuri kind of like these booths that sell souvenirs and food, such as takoyaki, and they have like carnival games like goldfish scooping. There's also karaoke contests and sumo matches and other forms of entertainment that are organized in conjunction with matsuri. If the festival is next to a lake, renting a boat is also a very common attraction. But some of the favorite elements of the most popular matsuri, such as the Nara no Kenka Matsuri, or the Nara Fighting Festival of Himeji, or the Neputa Matsuri of Hirosaki, are often broadcast on television for the entire nation to enjoy. These festivals are popular for their visually striking elements, such as Nara's enormous parade floats crashing into each other, or the giant 2-ton taiko drums of the Neputa festival.
Yo, parade floats crashing into each other?
If you've never seen this, I definitely recommend going to like YouTube or something and just put in Nada, N-A-D-A, fighting festival, and just take a look at the way these kind of, they crash these ginormous floats into each other. It's really, really intense. It's so cool. I would love to.
I know what I'm doing someday for the rest of my evening.
There you go. Just look out. You can, dude, there's hours of content there, so you're good to go.
That's rad.
But, you know, along with the kind of popularity of these summer festivals in Japan, come a lot of summer festival tropes in Japanese anime.
Yeah. I think almost every, like, anime, especially slice of life stuff, has, like, some... And even, God, there's so many non-slice of life stuff that have it too. Well, summer festivals are just like a thing in anime. Like beach episodes.
I feel like it has the same kind of energy as a beach episode, in that any kind of anime, if it's a sports anime or a shoujo or a shonen or whatever the case may be, there's always space for you to have a summer festival episode, even in like really dense dramas or like violent gangster shows. There is still space foreshadowing for a summer festival episode. Yes, we're foreshadowing. It's a literary technique. Look it up, nerds. But yeah, Best Boy Dan, do you want to take the first couple tropes we got here?
Yeah. So one of the most obvious is the yukata. Like, it's either the characters like wear it, and how would you describe a yukata to those who may not know?
A yukata is kind of like, if you're most people are familiar with kimono, And kimono is an overarching term for a number of different types of outfits, but the thing that most people associate with the term kimono is a pretty good approximation of what a yukata is. It's kind of a lighter summer dress that's tied together with a wide belt called an obi. And it's generally paired with wooden sandals that are called geta.
Those are the ones with the, like, two little, like, point, like, bars at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah. They're basically, like chunky woods. Yes. Yes and no. The women don't wear the ones like that. Ah. That's for the men's style.
Interesting.
For the women, is kind of like a wooden clog with a kind of, like, strap that comes up and splits into two on the top.
Which will also become important in later tropes that we get into.
But yeah, yukata are really cool, and it's just kind of a thing where the guy in the show wants to see his crush in a yukata.
Yeah, every time they see the person in the yukata, they, like, blush and they, like, look away and, like... the thing I like about them is they all have, like, really pretty designs on them, too. So, like, yes, part of it is, you know... It's kind of supposed to be like this summery outfit, you know, floral patterns, geometric designs, all that sort of stuff. I think, and we'll talk about this later, but Quintessential Quintuplets does a really good job of showing kind of the breadth of different designs you can have, since they have like five different quintuplets wearing yukatas in that episode.
But one of the other things to note about this kind of trope is that while in anime it is definitely geared towards women, like the whole point of the festival is to show women in their yukata, men also very often wear yukata to festivals as well. It looks different, obviously, because again, this is not necessarily the name for an item of clothing. It's the name for a style of dress, which is like an informal version of a kimono. There are male versions as well, and it's very common for men, especially men who are participating in temple or shrine events, to also wear the male version of a yukata for these events.
Mm-hmm. The next trope is probably my favorite, and that's the trope of fireworks. Like, I cannot think of a single summer festival episode that does not include fireworks. And from what I understand, fireworks in general are very prevalent in Japanese culture and celebration. But this is, like, just a huge part of it. Again, going back to that Quintessential Quintuplet episode, there's, like, an hour-long fireworks show.
Yeah, fireworks are huge in summer festivals, but, like, also not necessarily in the huge fireworks show way, although that is definitely part of it. Another common thing is to have just the, you know, the core group of characters lighting off, like, store-bought fireworks and sparklers, usually, like, at a beach or something like that, which is also a very common activity in Japan. They have a much less...
On the side of a river. We don't have in here as a trope, but is, like... I feel a large portion of these episodes also take place with the festival, like, right next to, like, a river with, like, a grassy hill leading up from the river.
Yeah, which makes you wonder, like, how many rivers are there in Japan? Like, for every festival to have a river nearby.
Apparently a lot.
Which is not always the case, although the one that I did go to while I was in Japan was by a river. So, I don't know. Maybe they
it's do. A real thing.
Maybe they are all on rivers. Who knows? But yeah, so I want you to do this next one.
Okay.
I know you like this one a lot.
Yeah, the next one I also enjoy. This happened to me back in the day, like at school, like celebrations. But they have the goldfish, like, game that you try and catch a goldfish, and usually that has some sort of, like, comedic element to it, like where someone just can't catch the goldfish, or like they end up with like 16 goldfish, or there's like a competition where like one person can't succeed and the other one does like crazy well. So that's a great trope that they play up a lot too.
Yeah, no, I love the goldfish scooping. Although nowadays in modern festivals, they don't do it anymore because it is considered animal cruelty. So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll have little floating toys that you can scoop instead. And I guess, like, in some stalls, if you win a certain amount of them, you get a goldfish. Yeah. As opposed to traumatizing the goldfish in order to get it. But yeah,
do you know how that game works? I've always been curious because it doesn't seem too difficult to me to like scoop up a goldfish.
So the reason why it's hard is because the center, the net, so to speak, is actually made of paper.
Ah.
So it will, it tears very easily.
Got it.
So you have to kind of get it, scoop it out fast enough in such a way that it doesn't just go right through the paper.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and generally what happens is you'll pay a certain amount of yen and you'll get like three nets or whatever. Mm-hmm. And once they break, they're done. Obviously, you can't use them again. So you just have to keep buying more and more until you get it. But speaking of buying more and more, my favorite of the festival tropes is definitely the street food. And we're talking all kinds of street food. Takoyaki, yakitori, yakisoba, steamed buns, dango, all of it. I love it all. You're also going to notice that the word yaki repeats itself a lot in these street food names. And the reason for that is because yaki really just means, it refers to grilled food. And that's one of the easiest things to do at a street side stand is to have food that you grill.
Okay.
All sorts of foods that are very common at festivals. These are just a sampling, but there'll also be like
cotton candy.
You know, regional specialties. There's hard candy, taiyaki, which are these little red bun filled crispy pancake things that are shaped like fish. But also there will be regional specialties for, you know, whatever the region is, their special thing. Like I'm sure like Hokkaido has a lot of ice cream and related dairy products because of their, you know, their attachment to the dairy industry. But yeah, so street foods, huge, absolutely huge. Mm-hmm. Also, you'll get a lot of times the main character will be drafted to help out running one of these stands.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like how it works at the beach episode where they have to help at the beach hut. So that's generally one way that a lot of these episodes get started.
These episodes always make me so hungry because all that street food is like my favorite stuff to eat.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The second one that I'm going to talk about now is actually going to be a decorative element. That's going to be the paper lantern strung between the stalls. And that's a common thing that people generally who are unfamiliar with Japan will associate with Japan is these paper lanterns, which I'm blanking on the names of right now. But it's just a festive decorative element that's very commonly used in Japan. And as a result, it's common in summer festival episodes as well. One that we kind of foreshadowed a little bit earlier on today is that the geta will malfunction. And this can take several forms. One common form is just that literally the strap breaks and they can't wear it anymore. And the other one is, which is common a lot in like romance stories, I find, is that the strap of the sandal will dig into the, you know, whatever the female character will like dig into her foot and she'll get like a blister or something. And like they'll have to like carry her so that they can put a Band-Aid on it or something like that. But again, almost always happens. It's so prevalent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And going with that, like almost every time you have one of these episodes, someone ends up getting carried too, whether it's that or like they get injured or, you know,
they're tired.
Yeah. Especially like, if there's like a little kid in the group, like they'll end up falling asleep and end up on like, you know, someone's back or something like that.
Yeah.
You also have you get someone dragged away by the hand. Usually, like this can be like, oh, we have to run away from these people. A lot of times, especially in like ones with like a romance thread to it, it's like the first hand holding moment, which I know is disgusting to do in public. But is definitely like a trope you're gonna see in a lot of these.
Yeah, for sure. It's always an exciting one when they're like they're already they've been like holding hands for like whatever 10 minutes and then they're like oh I just realized we're doing lewd things in public.
Oh my god, how could we?
But yeah, the next one up we have someone will purchase and wear a mask. This happens a fair amount. Masks are very common souvenirs from, you know, street stalls at festivals, especially the ones that happen in the summer. And a lot of times this will end up manifesting itself where, like, one character's wearing a mask and the other character doesn't realize it's them, and, you know, shenanigans ensue.
Also, a lot of them wear them on, like, the back side of their head.
Yeah, that's fairly common as well. I don't really know where that comes from, to be entirely honest with you.
Maybe it just looks a style.
Yeah. And the last one we're going to talk about is another one of my favorites, and that is the Carnival Shooting Game. This one, for some reason, is just, like, there are a ton of other, like, carnival-style games, but the two main ones are the Goldfish Scooping and the Shooting Gallery. And this one's always really fun because, like, different shows handle it different ways. Like, sometimes they'll have, like, the... they'll just, like, go over the top and, like break a bunch of rules and stuff. Or, like, you'll have the character who you would never expect is, like, a sharpshooter, like, winning all of the best prizes. Or, like, sometimes they'll have it where, like, the game is rigged and, like, the stuff that you have to shoot is glued.
I saw the best one of those recently. There was, like, a little video clip on, like, r/anime, and this one person, like, was shooting all the things, and they weren't going down, even though they were, like, direct shots, and one of the things was, like, a tomato or something, and they, like, shot it, and it, like, shredded the tomato, and you could see that there was, like, a nail sticking up through the board holding it in place, and the person was just, like, so angry and, like, took the pulp of the tomato and, like, forcefully handed it to the little kid and was like, get out.
Yeah, this one always leads itself to some really funny sequences. One of the shows where this one kind of rears its head is going to be the first entry in our top 10 summer festival episodes list.
Yay!
Hooray! Now, you know, the usual disclaimer that this list is not exhaustive or even particularly exertive. These are just 10 pretty good summer festival episodes we came up with off the top of our heads.
Basically, ones we were like, hey, what show had a festival episode? Oh, this one. Wait, no, wasn't that a winter episode or a fall festival episode? No, it was a summer festival episode. That counts.
Yeah, because winter and fall festivals are also a huge thing in anime.
Which will be a future episode, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. A lot of it will be repetitive. But the first entry on our list that we have here is Don't Toy With Me, Miss Nagatoro, Episode 7. In this episode, Senpai struggles with whether or not to ask Nagatoro to go to the summer festival with him. He chickens out and decides to go by himself, and of course ends up running into Nagatoro's rambunctious friends instead. After a pursuit, they catch him, and after letting him know that Nagatoro is busy with club activities, they put a dog collar on him and send a picture to Nagatoro in order to lure her out. This one's notable because they take a really roundabout route to a fairly traditional festival episode. It has a lot of really cute moments, plus we get to see Senpai go on the offensive for the first time, which is also pretty satisfying. But the sequence that we have with the shooting gallery in this one, it basically takes part in the struggle over Senpai between Nagatoro and her friends to see who gets to keep him with his dog collar. One of the things that they do is they see who can win the most toys at the shooting gallery.
Yeah, that was a really great episode.
Yeah. Another show that had a summer festival episode was Slime Diaries. Slime Diaries is great, and this episode of it was also great. It's a nice little kind of relaxed look at the characters from Slime. And I haven't finished the whole series yet. I'm kind of like slowly working through it because it's one of those shows that's just kind of nice to watch when nothing else is on. But yeah.
The next show we're going to talk about is, and I mentioned it before, Quintessential Quintuplets. This was season one. It's actually a two-parter, episodes 4 and 5. Like I said, there's an hour-long fireworks show, and they're filling that time. But this has masks, goldfish, yukatas, carrying someone on their back, fireworks. It pretty much has all of the things we talked about. The basic premise of this episode is that the quintuplets get separated. It's very important to them that all of them are together for the fireworks show, as it was their late mother's like favorite thing. Futuro, their tutor, is basically tasked with bringing them back together before that hour-long fireworks show ends. It's a really great episode. Like, it's early on in the season, but you get a lot of, like, because they're all separated in their own individual place, so each one of them, you kind of, as he meets up with them and collects them, you get a little bit of their relationship together and a little bit of, like, further development of each of their own individual personalities. It's great episode. Don't want to say too much more for fear of spoiling what happens. The other one I'd like to
fine line.
Yeah. Other one I'm gonna talk about briefly is the melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya. There's 8 episodes of Summer Festival, because the episode basically repeats itself over and over again. So you really get a sense of the Summer Festival. The one thing I will say is, like, there's, like, little things that are different between each episode, and, like, one thing that I always enjoyed looking for was one character gets a mask, and the mask is different each time, so it was always interesting to see which mask that character would be wearing for it.
Neato.
So there's 8 right there.
Yeah. So, you know, the next one we have is Tokyo Revengers. This one also takes place over a couple episodes, and that's because one of the very key story elements from this show happens during the Summer Festival. So I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to give anything away, but let's just say it is a very unconventional Summer Festival arc, really. Not even episode. It's a full arc.
Yeah. We also have Love Hina, which we've talked about before on the show. It's kind of like the OG, like, ecchi, like, harem kind of show. But just, you know, the title of the episode is Girls Dressed in Yukata for the Summer Festival. Let's! Exclamation mark. It's just let's.
Let's.
But, yeah, it's, you know, very traditional summer episode sort of thing.
Yeah, it's exactly what the title of the episode says. It's a chance to see the girls dressed up for the Summer Festival. Next up, we have Pokemon. Of course, Pokemon had a Summer Festival.
Pokemon
episode.
Has done every trope ever.
Yeah, Pokemon has at least one of each type of tropey episode. If there's one they don't have, hit us up and let us know.
I'm pretty sure Pokemon probably has 3 Summer Festival episodes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure that there's not just one. I'm sure there's plenty. I'm sure they probably also have Fall and Winter Festival episodes and also New Year's episodes. So, Pokemon, all of the episodes. The next one we have is Love is War. You might remember this one as being one of the major climactic arcs from the first season. It basically centers around the gang's determination to bring Kaguya to see the Summer Festival's fireworks. I won't say too much more about it because, like I said, it is a major element of the show. But the ending is quite awfully adorable. So definitely
strong keep an eye
for that one. Yeah, definitely watch that
also,
show.
Also, if you have not seen Love is War and you like comedy or romance, like, what are you doing?
What is you doing, baby?
Next show is Higahiro. What's the full title of Higahiro? Higahiro, I took in a high school runaway and shaved my beard.
It was after getting rejected, I shaved my beard and took home a high school runaway.
Which also, don't let the title scare you away. It's actually ended up being a really great show.
It did, although the title is problematic.
It is. But that one definitely has, like, cotton candy in it, which I mentioned before, the yukata, and especially, like, that moment of, like, the blushing and seeing the yukata, and, like, mm-hmm. the guy's like, oh, it's pretty, and then she starts blushing. There's fireworks by the riverbank, and there is plenty of just degenerate hand-holding in it. So for all of those sickos out there, they'll enjoy it.
Disgusting! The last one we have here on our list is Uzaki-chan, episode 8. This one was a really fun one. After a drunken birthday party mishap, things between Uzaki and Sakurai are left feeling awkward. In order to remedy this, Sakurai's co-workers force him to ask Uzaki-chan to go to the summer festival with him in order to smooth things out between them. Really, it's just an excuse to see Uzaki-chan in a yukata, to be frank, but they do all of the summer festival things from yakisoba to fireworks, and just as things finally manage to get back to normal, Uzaki-chan accidentally knocks her senpai out. Definitely a twist on the summer festival trope, but at least he gets a lap pillow out of it, so there's that.
Yes, a lap pillow and some shade.
Yes, as it were. Which only makes sense if you know anything about this show. But yeah, that wraps up our top in quotation marks, I guess, 10 list of summer festival episodes, and that also wraps up our episode about summer festivals. So let us know what you think. Are you going to go to any summer festivals? Are you going to have your own? Let us know. I want to come for the food. Hit us up at thebestboyspod@gmail.com or on Twitter and Instagram at bestboys_pod.
Now, best boy Justin, go win me a goldfish.
Frankly, best boy Dan, I don't think you can handle the responsibility.